Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. This week we're doing Superhot and Transistor.
And what's your name?
I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
I was getting to it.
Okay.
Go ahead and jump straight into Superhot.
Yeah.
Which, it's a first-person shooter game. It is browser-based, at least the one that we're talking about. And it was released in 2013 as part of a 7-day FPS challenge by a team calling themselves Bluebrick.
Mm-hmm. It's got kind of an interesting backstory to it. You know, the idea of the 7-day FPS challenge is really cool. And it was inspired by a game where you're doing essentially the same thing, but you're a cat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Time for Cat.
I didn't even know that.
Where time only, but you're just like froggering across an intersection in that okay. Flash game. And this is, you know, obviously a hyper-stylized FPS.
Yes. Which the uniqueness to it is that time doesn't move unless you move.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you to do some cool, like, Matrix-style sort of bullet time things. But besides that, Gary, give me some insight as to what you like about Superhot.
Essentially, just what you said, it's one of those, it's a one-sentence concept that I think is kind of irresistible. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it hasn't been done more.
Yeah, me too.
I really like things that take existing genres, especially something as ubiquitous as the FPS, and find new ways to kind of twist that gameplay. I don't think that happens that often. And it just totally changes the way you play, and you have any time you can stop and consider what you're going to do next. It's some kind of weird, you know, it's not turn-based, but it is much more considered than an FPS generally is. You know, and the game, you know, the Flash version that we played, or the Unity version online, you know, it's very short, but they just recently, you know, funded their Kickstarter. It's going to be a more developed game. And just seeing from the very short online version how they've taken advantage of that mechanic to design their levels around that. It's just really fun to watch, very fun to play through.
Yeah, it's only about 5 levels in the prototype, as they're now calling it, since they did that Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, the 5 levels are really uniquely laid out. They take really good advantage of the mechanic. And it's just, like, on top of being a cool mechanic that is, like you said, really surprising that no one else has developed a game around this idea. But it's also just super stylish.
Mm-hmm.
It's all done in very flat shaded grayscale, except for the enemies and the bullet trails, which are a bright red, which mm-hmm. gives it a really cool aesthetic.
It looks like if they had a little bit more detail, it'd almost look like cel shaded.
Yeah, yeah,
in a way, and it reminded me of for Watch Out for Fireballs, we did Killer 7, mm-hmm. and like some of the hallways and stuff looked like things from Killer 7.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a real neat style that they've got going for it.
Yeah, and it kind of works with you know, everything. Like the music is really minimal, and the sound effects, like the bullets sound really loud. Like the you know, everything kind of combines to make a really unique kind of feel mm-hmm. to it. Much more so than any kind of story. Like the prototype, you can tell they put this kind of placeholder story in, you know, there as this kind of you know, you're an agent and you're being taken advantage of or something like that. Like just because it was, you know, done as an exercise. But I, you know, I'm interested with their sense of style to see what they'll actually do with the narrative in the main version. You know, the game doesn't need that. It can be an arcade experience, but the, you know, their sense of style carrying across the narrative is really exciting.
Yeah, I hope they have good good writing abilities to actually develop a cool story around the whole mechanic as well.
Yeah, whatever this like kind of superpower is.
Yeah.
Of this agent.
It also, I mean, another part of the style is how awesome the starting sequence is when you start it up, where it just screams super hot at you over and over again.
Yeah, it's really catchy for a song that only has like 2 notes.
Super hot.
Hot.
Super hot.
It's also just off rhythm.
Yeah.
A little bit, which is what makes it so good too. It's like looping really well, but not in a way that's like on a 4-4 beat.
Yeah.
Dun, yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Like there's just a little bit of a delay between beats and it sounds really cool.
Read.
Yeah.
So, I don't think there's a whole lot more we can really say about Superhot. Like we said, it's a 5-level little prototype, but mainly we wanted to kind of just bring it to the limelight because they're making a full game out of it, and that's going to be super cool. So play the prototype and get hyped for the Kickstarter version.
And we needed something slight to pair with Transistor,
right.
Which is like a much weightier experience.
Very much so.
Yeah. So the so definitely go check it out. You can just Google it. I think it might just be superhotgame.com, need yeah. Unity, but it you can speed run it in, you know, literally like 90 seconds. So it is not a huge commitment of your time, like many of the things we talk about, and it is definitely worth checking out to see what people can do. Transistor. Tell us a little bit about Transistor, Nick.
So Transistor is a new game from from Supergiant Games, the developers that made Bastion, which you and I love, and we've referenced probably at least a couple times on the show already. It is out for Microsoft Windows and PlayStation 4, and just came out in May, so just a couple months ago from the time we're recording this. But it is a isometric action game, I guess you'd say, but the sort of cool main mechanic that is on top of that is it's actually got a turn-based, semi-turn-based fighting system for planning out all the moves you're going to make. But of course, it's Supergiant, so there's much more style on top of it besides just that main mechanic.
It's a lot like, it plays a little bit like Parasite Eve.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, like you have this active bar kind of filling up, and then once it's there, you can stop and kind of plan an action. Mm-hmm. The difference, they have this, a little bit of the kind of action point, economy that you might find in another, in like a Fallout Tactics almost, where you have a limited number of moves and actions, where like different actions, like going prone and using grenades and stuff, take different amount of action points.
Right.
So when your turn kind of comes up, you're limited by what you can do, and that just becomes another resource that you have to consider. It's incredibly deep.
Yes.
Like, it's one of the things, I mean, there's a lot to say about this game, and I also loved Bastion, but Bastion is very much, intentionally so, like, uses kind of comfortable mechanics.
Yeah.
You know, like Zelda, Super Nintendo-esque mechanics, and it's one of the finest, like, expressions of that. Like, that might be my favorite Zelda game.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you.
Yeah, it's so good. And this is much, much more daring mechanically.
Very much so, yeah. It's not just built on very simple mechanics. They actually took their own kind of idea as to how to do this turn-based action role-playing game. Instead of just being a hyper-stylized genre that's already been done to death, it's all that style plus more risky chances on how the actual gameplay goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like at first kind of glance, like we both played the demo at PAX, and it feels a little bit like they're doing like future Bastion initially, because there is kind of a constant companion with you, but it feels very different in that like the narrator in Bastion is omniscient, is telling you about the world, mm-hmm. whereas in Transistor, it's somebody else who has a limited kind of perspective as well. So what that means is in Bastion, there's not that much mystery to it kind of until the end. Like, everything is known. It's maybe not known to you, the player, but the character knows it and the narrator tells you. And this, you're kind of discovering it together, and it lends itself like a complexity to the plot when you don't have someone just kind of telling you what things are.
Right. Yeah. In Bastion, the narrator would actually say what you're about to do.
Yeah.
It's a, past tense telling of the story that you're playing through in real time.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, you've actually got you as the main character, Red, don't have a voice. That's sort of one of the main draw to the storyline at the beginning is your voice somehow has been lost or taken from you when you were a famous singer previously, and you get this sword called the Transistor who's talking to you, which obviously is revealed over time that it actually has a personal relationship with the character Red. And as you go on the game, continue to pick up more and more kind of souls, essences that go into the sword. So I believe it seems to make sense to me that the character who's in the transistor is a close friend of Red's before the storyline takes place.
Or lover.
Yeah, I think lover makes the most sense.
Yeah.
We'll get into that when we do a spoiler section at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's not too big of a spoiler. It's a mild one.
Yeah.
What other things like going on in this game mechanically are the kind of combat system and battle system is airtight. Like it is one of the strongest, most fun kind of battle systems I've played in an indie game in a very long time, or really like any video game, just because you have an incredible amount of variety in your build and ability to kind of change it around at a moment's notice. So, Guy, why don't you give us the basics on how that works?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So you start off with just a couple powers, and as you progress through the game, you collect more of these by finding other people that get absorbed by the sword, basically. Each of them, but also during level ups, Each of them gives you different attacks or otherwise abilities that you can change your loadout at each checkpoint. And they, on top of being like attacks that you can use during your planning phase, each one can also be used as a modifier for another attack or as a passive. And so each power that you gain has three different methods of use. And each power that you combine with another power kind of has a unique change to what it does to it. So some of them are actually really powerful changes because of the way that the abilities mesh.
And more than that, like each power has two slots for two modifiers. So in the end, you have like it's something, you know, it's like 12 or 14 different powers, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And they, you know, there's an amazing amount of variety when each one can be combined with two other ones to do completely different things. Any combination of powers will operate a little bit differently in multiple factors. So you're looking at, you know, like damage type, you're looking at the spread, you're looking at the amount of kind of action points it uses, you know, and it just, there's just a lot of things to consider. It never feels clunky or, you know, really weighs you down because it's all really intuitive. Like if something, you know, shoots kind of a shotgun blast, applying that to another thing is going to increase its spread.
Yeah.
And you just kind of know that. You know, and it gets real clever too. Like, I think the one that splits, there's a thing that when you shoot somebody, it splits into another one. Mm-hmm. When you apply that to like your companion, you get two smaller, like summons.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little bit like Inside a Star-Filled Sky. Yeah. Like you do kind of that a similar thing in that game.
Combining powers to make new effects.
Yeah. Like you know, you're going through and kind of applying these modifiers to your basic attack, but it's a lot more kind of reasonable.
Sorry. The other thing it reminded me of was, done way worse in Kirby 64.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you ever played that, but the new kind of fresh thing they tried to add on the Kirby formula was
Mythos.
That you could combine powers. So you, instead of just sucking up one enemy and getting a power, if you suck up one enemy and then suck up another at the same time, the powers will combine to make a new power. But it's done really terribly compared to Transistor. Like, Transistor just has everything worked out perfectly. It's like they play tested forever every combination to make each one something cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kirby thing I'm thinking about, and it's probably part of it is just control. So like in that Kirby thing, you're at the mercy of like what you happen to run into.
Yeah.
You know, and what happens to be close enough to swallow at the same time. Whereas this just gives you tools and lets you play with them.
For sure.
You know, which is wonderful. Really gorgeous.
Yes.
And in a way that is different than Bastion, like same kind of painted style, but different stylized characters, much, you know, different environment and just amazing soundtrack. Like these guys and their, you know, use of guitar is just like, you know, use guitar sometimes, guys.
Yeah. It's brilliant. Yeah. Instead of Bastion sort of, you know, Legend of Zelda style fantasy world, although it has like, this weird floating element to it that, you know, made it really pretty. This takes place in a future, almost cyberpunky universe, and still maintains the very like painterly, pretty style.
Mm-hmm.
Done 100 times fancier. It's so good.
Yeah, it's very pretty to look at. It's a very short game, but it encourages replay. Mm-hmm. And when you replay it, you get to keep all of your items and combinations and such. And it's as we'll talk about in the spoiler section, the plot is incredibly dense. So it kind of takes a couple playthroughs to really get it. I have an idea of what I think is going on, but I don't have a definitive, like, Transistor lore
right.
explanation or anything. But I do have kind of an idea of what I think it's about. But, it, you know, it definitely is about something, and I like the way that it is about something.
Yes.
You know, it just carries the story really well and presents it in a really interesting way.
And it does have a lot of, you know, as for a short game, there's a lot of sort of lore to dig into if you want to. Each of the powers is associated with a person who has a bio, and if you use that power in each of the three ways that you can, as you know, as a main power, as a modifier for another power, or as a passive, each of those unlocks more story and lore about that the character that the power is sourced from.
Mm-hmm. There's also a really interesting mechanic encouraging you to you'll kind of have a variety. Like, you know, I would come across a combo of things that I liked. And then, but if you die or if you get hurt, you don't actually die. You lose access to one of your powers.
Right.
And you have to rest at like the rest points twice in order to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to the next one, you're going to have to use a power that you're not used to for a time. Which is really cool. Like it got me to try out some combinations that I wouldn't have otherwise
Yeah, same.
Tried. Yeah. I fucking love this game. Like, I thought it was wonderful.
I did too.
So, yeah. Super hard to put down.
One other thing that you kind of progress through the game, very similar to the, I forget what they were called in Bastion, but you can add modifiers that make the game more difficult for yourself to boost how much experience drops.
Mm-hmm.
Or how much experience you gain from each battle. And this game is just like, without being irritating, it's just a sequence of battles over and over. Like, there's a little bit of exploration between each part, and there's, of course, beautiful scenery to see in between, but it really is all about the fight system, and it's just, here's a fight, a little bit of walking, here's another fight. There's not exactly a lot of purposely built-in variety as to what happens in each level.
Yeah, there's no, like, platforming. There's not very many, like, hidden secrets, you know, to speak of. There's some, like, if you go off the beaten path, like, some things happen, but that's not really the point of it. Whereas I remember in Bastion, there's a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
But it's because the combat system is so much better. And Bastion has a good combat system. Like, I like Bastion, but because it's so better, that's why it makes it work on New Game Plus too, is just kind of doing more fights with this toolbox is fun. And we'll talk about it in the spoiler section, but it really culminates in like a really amazing expression of what came before.
Yeah.
You kind of mechanically. Yeah, I think I might be ready to talk about that.
Yeah, sure. Like we said, there's a lot of storyline here, so we're going to jump into a spoiler section so we can talk about some of that and some of the mechanics that don't show its head until later in the game. So play this game. It's amazing.
Yeah, and we are recording this on the eve of the summer Steam sale.
Oh, yeah.
It will go on sale at some point. Like, grab nab it. It's worth it at full price, but if you're gun-shy about that. Yeah, where can people find us on the internet, Nick?
They can find us in all sorts of places, but our homepage is at duckfeed.tv/comrade, and there you can see all the latest episodes, and also there's a comment box to leave us any suggestions or comments you'd like to make there. On top of that, we're on a bunch of social media, and we're on Twitter as Comrade Podcast, at Comrade Podcast, and we're on Facebook at facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're on iTunes, where most people get their podcasts from. And if you'd like to help spread the show, you can leave some nice feedback on there, rate and review us, and also tell your friends about us. It's always very much appreciated and helps get us a little bit more exposure we wouldn't have otherwise.
Agreed 100%. And we should talk about Transistor some more.
All right. So if you haven't played, please end your episode now. If you have... Stay tuned after this little ditty, and we'll talk a little bit more about Transistor.
All right, we're back.
All right. So Transistor. Some spoilery stuff. So, what do you want? You want to talk about some of the mechanical stuff that happens later, or do you want to talk about the story?
Let's talk about the plot first, okay. Since it kind of leads into the boss fight, which is really what I wanted to talk about. The kind of like the good boss fight, the end boss fight, rather than kind of the mini boss fights
Right. Leading
up to it, which I wasn't super crazy about.
No, they're all right. Yeah. They're not
they're fine. They're not stellar. Yeah, not that exciting. And I never understood. So that you fight these things on the way called the spine. I never really got that. I don't really know what it is or what its significance is in the story.
Yeah, it's just some
like monster.
Yeah, it's just some monster who just happens to be part of the process somehow.
Yeah.
So the storyline. So you start off, you're Red, you're a famous singer in the city, Cloud Bank. You've lost your voice, and you've found the Transistor. City's being invaded by these monsters, known collectively as the Process, and you are chasing down a group who you and the Sword believe to be behind it, known as the Camerata.
Mm-hmm. And the plot kind of unfolds from there. There are a lot of little... kind of twists and turns about their motivations. We won't go through all of them. Like, this isn't a Watch Out for Fireballs episode. But the, there's a lot that's left kind of up to interpretation.
A lot, yeah.
Throughout this, yeah. And I think that the game is like a post-singularity kind of thing. Like, I think that this is the cloud. I don't think any of this stuff exists.
Yeah, no, there definitely seems to be, the name Cloud Bank seems to suggest that. But the fact that there's these little voting booths and... that you come across all the time, and the very first one I believe you find is a weather voting situation where the denizens of Cloud Bank can vote on what the weather of the next day is going to be,
mm-hmm.
which seems to suggest a much more technologically advanced, if not, like you said, completely simulated singularity experience.
Yeah, like this kind of, you know, utopian thing, and it's up to you to figure out kind of what happened. And as close as I can figure, what it seems like once you start kind of running into members of the Camarada, is that they are also, you know, they are contrite in this. Like they, you know, I think you come upon one who has killed himself. Mm-hmm. You know, they are not cackling villains. And ultimately, when you run into the end boss one, the kind of Royce, I kind of get the sense from the game that they have kind of introduced this thing almost as a, you know, perfection is boring alternative.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
you know, everything is, yeah, if everything is great, nothing can be great.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's like pretty much seems to be exactly, I don't think that's quite their slogan, but there is something very similar to that.
Yeah, which is interesting. That's an interesting motivation for a game. It kind of inverts, you know, what generally happens. Like you've gotten to the paradise point.
Yep.
And then these people have unmade it just kind of out of, you know, boredom and wanting to shake things up.
But unfortunately that leads to a lot of death that I think they weren't quite expecting to be the mix up that happens. And it seemed to have spun out of the Camarada's control.
Yeah, and then the process also seems to be kind of like rebuilding things, or at least like kind of making them blander. Like as you go, there are less textures and you run into more kind of just white walls and geometry.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the process is almost like, if it's not in the cloud, it's almost like a nano molecular, you know, it's almost like a 3D, advanced 3D printer, like just kind of creating these things for you to fight and recreating these, you know, stock geography.
What I felt like is, in the last scene, it seems to be that's sort of the unstylized version of the universe they live in.
Like, yeah.
Cloud Bank without all the control, all the people who are deciding how it should look and feel, it reverts back to, or maybe, you know, as part of the process being around, reverts back to this sort of plain, unstylized, just building blocks.
Right, like if there aren't people to vote on what this building should look like,
mm-hmm.
this is what it is.
Yep.
And that's, you know, what is paradise without people, you know? And it's important to note that, like, kind of what sets off the quest is this, you know, person who you have this relationship with, you know, probably a lover, being murdered and kind of found in this sword, you know, and you kind of like, it is about people kind of sets you off. Like you're not setting out to save the world. You're setting out like for very personal reasons.
Yes.
I really like, and this could have been in the main episode too, but I really like how you don't ever like swing the sword like a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, like it's almost always like just kind of a tool.
It is.
It's way too heavy for her to use.
Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it's blade shaped, but it doesn't have an edge. It has these like big electronic fins coming off of it. It definitely doesn't seem to be, you know, the sword is iconic, not an actual descriptor of what its use is.
You know, and so very, very neat. As you kind of go through and learn this little bit of what's happening, you get to the boss fight, which is one of my favorite boss fights, definitely that we've done on the show, against Royce, where you are on a beach with these kind of pods around, which could be people, you know, dreaming in this singularity. People have been uploaded, and he has the same powers that you do. So it's that, you know, kind of Dark Link thing, you know, like you're always fighting somebody with the same powers, but when your powers are to freeze time, being the victim of that is very interesting.
Yeah.
And kind of playing his recharge meter versus your recharge meter.
It's really stressful. The rest of the fight, there's enemies to fight and they can do damage to you, but none of them have your godlike ability that is having transistor in hand. And, you know, at the end boss fight, he has the transistor as well as you. And mm-hmm. he's doing the exact same things you are.
Yep. It's very cool. And just plays, you know, you've spent this whole game kind of mastering the system, so you know it really well. And so for example, like during that fight, being quick on the draw is super important, you know, because you can freeze time. So being the first person to freeze time is really, really important. You don't have any time to consider your actions. And like kind of putting space, you know, while like managing your recharge time, while being aware of his and kind of like getting, you know, putting space and making him kind of take a circuitous route, you know, getting a feel for the range of the things that he has equipped. All of that stuff is just very, you know, all comes into play and you have this firsthand experience with it. It's very satisfying and it's difficult. Like it's the game is not too hard. This last boss is pretty tough, but in a really satisfying, fair way.
Yeah. I think it's meant to, sort of showcase that you've actually not only have gained a real feel for the battle system, but that you've spent this time going through this world and you have more to play with as far as your combinations. You know what works.
Mm-hmm.
You know which passives are going to help you here. And so, you know, he has powers too, and he's using a lot of them, and he has some things that are comboed up as well. But I feel like you're meant to feel slightly better than him in that you have a better grip on the powers and which way they can be combined and how to use the system to its advantages.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is a neat thing for them to explore. Giving this guy who's almost your equal, but you're just that slightly.
You just have the knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like you have the exact same powers, but you've been practicing, which is, you know, games, you know, good bosses are final exams for games. And like, this is a good final exam because you are working with, you know, what you've been setting the whole time.
Exactly.
It's really remarkable. Like, it's a really great boss fight.
A very solid end of the game, in every way.
Mm-hmm. So then you leave him kind of trapped and you go back to Cloud Bank. And, you know, you can eventually, you know, attempt to, you know, like you think that you might be going to try to rebuild. But instead you end up actually impaling yourself with the transistor and commit suicide. And, you know, this is not the end though, because as you know, like people who are hurt by this sword end up kind of being absorbed to it. In the end, you are with the man in kind of a verdant paradise, you know, which is like the, you know, maybe you've rebuilt the cloud or the singularity to be this.
Yeah, you're another step deeper in the simulated world. You're inside the transistor instead of inside a cloud bank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the right before that, it's pretty much made obvious by Royce that there is no getting your lover out of transistor. It's a one-way street.
Yep.
Which sort of the whole goal from Red's point of view in my mind was to figure out how to reverse him being placed in the transistor. And when that's revealed to not be the result, then you know, there's no choice. You're just Red wants to be with him. That's why she sought out this whole story. So
mm-hmm. It's in really interesting contrast to Bastion, where like the choice at the end of Bastion, where you can either it's a little like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, like you can rebuild everything with all the chances of everything going wrong again, or you can move forward. And like in Bastion, I feel like the clear correct choice is to move forward,
right?
You know, and this game kind of posits that more of like a what, like the simulation is fine, like the fake version of what you want is fine if it's what you want, because in the end, like, you know, that's what you want.
Yeah, especially, you know, considering that, you know, from your mind point of view, it was just as much a simulation in Cloud Bank as it would be inside the transistor. So
right, but that like that idea of like there's kind of like this is there's the real world, you know, that you can turn towards, or you can turn towards this idealized version of what you want.
Yeah.
You know, is kind of plays through both games. And it's really neat. Like it makes a very nice, like kind of a side game to Bastion, or like kind of thematic sequel.
I agree. And you were telling me earlier, comparing it to Dark Souls 1 to Dark Souls 2.
Yeah. Where like in Dark Souls 1, they give you the choice at the end. And it's essentially, you know, it's a very similar choice in some ways. Like it is, you know, in some ways, like it is scrap everything, or, you know, try to let the Age of Fire go on for a short time. And they give you that choice. And in the sequel, the developers take a stand, and that happens in Dark Souls 2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the end of Dark Souls 2, which, you know, this isn't the place for spoilers for Dark Souls 2, but the, you know, suffice it to say that there's not, you know, the developers take a stand, you know, right. Something happens as opposed to giving you this choice. Like they kind of, and even the existence of the sequel in Dark Souls 2 kind of says a little bit about what choice, you know, what the choice has meant in Dark Souls 1.
Right.
And, this is a little bit like that too. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's either reset and know that this cycle is just going to happen again, or figure out how to live on with these consequences. Yep. And that's, parallels exactly with Bastion's ending, and with how, you know, to you and I, and I think to most players, there's an obvious right choice to that. You know, when you're playing a game, a right choice. I'm sure dealt with a serious choice like that, it's a much harder thing. But when you're idealizing something in a game, then you're going to go with the idealized choice of, you know, there's no point in doing this all over again. We know what happens. So let's move forward.
also, like, let's explore something different. You know, like, if in Bastion, the right choice was to move on, you know, so that was the correct choice. This is what it means to and what circumstances can justify not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
All right. That's Transistor. It's fabulous. It's,
yeah, definitely, definitely get in on that. And it's so mechanically solid that even if you did listen to the spoiler part because you didn't give a shit, it's still worth playing because it still is very fun in your hand.
Yeah, I haven't played a game with as solid of a core mechanic to it in a while. So it was really, really refreshing. Very, very fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
So
agreed.
Thanks for joining us, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, later.